The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Want the real story behind the sound bites and headlines? Let's find the facts. Remember, it's not a conspiracy theory if it's the truth. You are not paranoid or confused. You just need to know.
Welcome in, everybody. Kip Kiefer with you for another edition of Need to Know here on TKR and wherever you get the Tony Curry Radio broadcasts across Apple platforms and various other locations. Joining you on a Monday right after a very disturbing weekend. I would much rather talk to you about holiday spirit and traditions of Christmas and other happy topics. But we just had a weekend to forget of so much violence and needless, senseless acts committed by people that there's just no excuse for some of the atrocities that we witnessed this weekend. And I want to touch on pretty much the variety of them and just make some points. Of course, the most destructive was in Australia at Bondi Beach, which in the Sydney, Australia area is one of the most popular gathering locations, I guess you can say, in the land down under, a pristine beach and a place where much leisure time and events are staged. Last night was a big deal gathering for people to celebrate the beginning of Hanukkah for folks of the Jewish faith in Australia. And unfortunately, that celebration was completely marred, tragically, by two complete unacceptable human beings who decided to take that opportunity, stand at a footbridge overseeing the beach area, and just fire indiscriminately into the crowd. They've killed 16 people. There are over 40 people wounded, just raining bullets down. Again, not targeting anybody specifically, just because it was a Jewish celebration, the anti-Semitic behavior. This was a father and son team of assassins. The father had immigrated to Australia back in the late 90s. The son was born in Australia, so he was an Australian citizen, 24 years old, and he has been under investigation in recent years for terrorist activities and affiliations with radical Islamic groups. So this is clearly an anti-Semitic hate crime, and it went on for about 6 or 7 minutes before the intercession of a very brave individual, a Syrian-born citizen. There's a lot of controversy. A lot of media reports are saying that he's of Muslim description. But there are also conflicting reports that Ahmed, who was his first name, a local shopkeeper who also immigrated to Australia legally back several years ago, he decided to intervene, tackling the father, wrestling the gun away from him, and getting into a tussle. Police pretty much inactive, just surrounding the area and still talking about what to do as these bullets continue to ring out. There's a lot of criticism for the police response that they pretty much just stood off to the side and were like paralyzed with how to mobilize. The bottom line, this citizen interceded. The police then moved in, ended up shooting the assailants, both of them, and stopping the carnage. The father died at the scene. The son is still hospitalized with wounds. And the hero was also treated at the scene and now hospitalized with gunshot wounds to the upper arm and to the hand. So he's going to be okay. He's being hailed as a hero. And again, there's some controversy. A lot of media outlets are quick to point out in this time of being desperate for the right narrative that this was a Muslim who interceded against other far radical Muslim terrorists There are some reports that he is actually a Maronite Christian, which is a sect of religion closely affiliated to the Catholic Church in Lebanon, the country that he came from after being born in Syria and, again, immigrating to Australia. So it doesn't matter what his religion, the fact that he had the guts to do the right thing and probably saved dozens of additional lives is something that everybody in the world should be proud of, that somebody still thinks it's worth, possibly sacrificing themselves for the good of others. So congratulations to that gentleman who stepped in when the police apparently were pretty much inactive, just observing what was going on. Australia has very strict gun laws. It is a nation that has basically, without you going through all kinds of different phases of registration and investigation, prohibited the ownership of firearms for most of its citizens. This guy, this father, had somehow registered over the years 6 different weapons. Gun laws got toughened a few years back, so he probably was already in possession of a lot of these. But of course, right now, all of the early rhetoric out of Australia, a country you really wouldn't think is ultra liberal in this particular category, but the headlines in the papers screaming that horrific weapons result in the death of 15 people on the beach at a Hanukkah celebration. Well, you know, once again, we're at that same narrative halfway across the world, or pretty much completely across the world, that you get into here with the extreme left saying that guns are responsible for these crimes. It's not the guns, it's the guys pulling the trigger. When on New Year's Eve in New Orleans last year here in America, a guy drove a pickup truck and mowed down people celebrating in the middle of the night in the French Quarter on Bourbon Street. We didn't have a ban on pickup trucks after that. When Timothy McVeigh bombed the federal building in Oklahoma City, killing dozens of Americans, there was no prohibition on fertilizer, which was what he had loaded the back of a rental truck and ignited to create the bomb that brought down the Murrow Building in Oklahoma City. It's not the tool used, it's the person who utilizes it, and that's what we've got to get back to. It's not guns that kill people, it's people that pull the trigger on guns. And again, I'm not a gun advocate at all. I've never owned a gun. I maybe fired a gun once or twice at some kind of range. I don't even remember if I actually have. I'm not a gun guy at all. I think that the Constitution is pretty clear that it is a right as an American to bear arms, and I support the Constitution until the laws changed. But I'm not some far right. I know I could be dismissed here at anything I say, but on this particular issue, I am not a major gun advocate. I don't like them. I'm not comfortable around them. But in circumstances where innocent people are being slaughtered, it's good if some good guys actually are armed and can step in and do something about it, such as the police. So with all that being said, a terrible situation. And it really introduces a larger problem that I'm not going to spend a lot of time on, because it's a complicated issue, but it's one that you need to be aware of, and that's what the whole premise of this show is, need to know. Of course, the Islamic faith, the Muslim religion, founded by Muhammad, the great prophet who began the movement and talked about all of the aspects of it, the worship of Allah, the Muslim Islamic faith. Muhammad died in 636, which was quite a few years back. But the movement that is now the kind of global spread of the Muslim religion and Islamic extremists was spawned by the writings of Muhammad all those many, many years ago, where he basically set forth a formula for the complete spreading of the across the entire earth of people inclined to follow his teachings and worship his God and do the things that that these really radical, archaic, hardcore Muslims still believe in. And he called it the golden age in the future of the Islamic faith. And it has been a long time for this to take root, I guess you could say, because now there are, of course, ways to populate the entire world. And if you look in throughout Europe, of course, other portions of the world, here in America especially, we've got tremendous numbers of people of the Muslim persuasion. And I'm not pointing the finger at everybody who is of that faith, but there is a radical element, and these are people that do not immigrate for the idea of becoming citizens of where they settle. They have no intention of assimilating or becoming Americans, which is really the premise of immigration in past centuries. These people want to follow the mandate set forth all those many ancient years ago and spread the faith throughout the globe. And here in America, that's a big problem because one of our most sacred rights, just like the right to bear arms, is the right of free religious choice and the tolerance of other religious choices. I don't begrudge anybody for being a Muslim. Believe what you want to believe. I have no problem with the Jewish faith. I have no problem with Mormons, with Hindus, with whatever religion you want to throw out there. I think it's a personal decision. But these people don't believe that. The ancient writings say that anybody who does not follow their faith is an infidel and really doesn't have the right to even live or exist. And that's a big problem in this country where freedom of religion is one of the primary founding causes of why we are the United States of America today. It was religious persecution that drove so many people out of their home countries, and they took a big chance and came to form a free society, free choices, free speech, freedom of religion, right to bear arms, all these premise that we hold dear today. So it's a real problem in this country to have the radical Muslims here and a complicit left who is already counting on them being voting blocks. We already see what's happening in Minnesota with the scandals of billions of dollars stolen by Somali transplants that our State Department actually flew here and populated in a colony kind of situation. These people, for the most part, do not have high school educations. About 80% of them are unemployed, living off the government and other programs. And in Minnesota, we're scamming the Minnesota authorities, so I talked about this last week, for now reportedly billions of dollars, setting up fake businesses and charities and different humanitarian concerns to milk millions and millions and now in the billions of dollars out of the state of Minnesota. So it's a big problem all over the world. The world flow of people to all different parts of the world, Europe is totally overrun, and there's a lot of movements. There are there are leaders being elected because the numbers are so overwhelming. In England, you've had a Muslim mayor of London for about three terms now. It's really a distressing situation. And again, I've got nothing against anybody. If they want to come to our country and be Americans and legally immigrate, that's just fine. But that's not the intention of a great segment of these people, and it's a big, big problem around the world. You keep hearing about the global infatada, the controversial language used by now Mayor Mondami of New York. You hear college students outside chanting infatada, which means death to Jews. It means the elimination of Jews from the planet. And if that's what these American kids that are grown up and brainwashed by educators and college professors and the radical left, if that's what they really espouse and believe in, that is a huge concern in our country because it violates all the things that we hold dear and stand for: individual liberty, individual rights, individual choice. So some sobering food for thought on the Australian situation over the weekend. Just absolutely horrible. A religious gathering, a celebration. One little girl, 10 years old, is one of the victims. It is absolutely abominable. I heard somebody call this a tragedy today. It's not a tragedy. It was planned, it was executed, and it was execution. It's abominable. It's ungodly. It's unforgivable. There's no rhetoric you can use to justify it. It's horrible. I heard one commentator say today, well, look what happened in Gaza. You can't blame these people that are still inspired by radical Muslim beliefs to lash out. But let's talk about what happened to trigger what happened in Gaza. On October 7th, 2023, people with the same inclinations as this duo that killed people over the weekend raided Israeli towns, not military personnel, just people in their homes, people at a music festival, people walking on the street, killing over 1,200 Israelis in this raid and kidnapping and holding hostage for several years, more than 400 individuals. So, you know, to just focus on what happened in Gaza, the Israeli response, it was instigated by the actions of October 7th and that horrible, horrible incident in Israel against the civilian population, where small children, babies, older people, men, women, children, it didn't matter, indiscriminately killed or kidnapped, an absolutely horrid blotch on the recent history of the world. So enough on that subject. Let's talk about here closer to home. We've still got an unsolved campus shooting, which happens all too often, this time at Reverend Brown University. Brown is in Providence, Rhode Island. It's an Ivy League school. It has a $7 billion endowment, one of the most high-level private schools in the country. It was in the engineering building where a gunman came in on Saturday during a study session. A bunch of students hearing lectures from professors to prepare for exams for the end of the term. He came in blasting, killed two students, including anybody living here in Birmingham, as I do. We are mourning tonight because one of the two victims that he killed was a young lady from Mountain Brook right here in Metro Birmingham, a 19-year-old who was vice president of the Republican Student Association at Brown, which is probably about 5% of the student population, highly liberal school. I hope it doesn't turn out that she was the target of this because of her political persuasion. The other victim was from one of the former Russian provinces, who was there studying, wanting to become a brain surgeon. Just absolutely tragic. A lot of people wounded, two people killed. The wrong suspect rounded up and held as a person of interest for almost 24 hours, and his name was even released. Some really inept police work here, because they end up determining that they had no evidence to link him to the crimes that let him go. So now for the past 48 hours, there is a killer on the loose in Providence, Rhode Island, and maybe his grievance, you know, targeting the engineering department, probably not going to be that difficult from a police standpoint to find somebody disgruntled that would target that one particular area. They've got surveillance footage, but not very good pictures of the guy. He was wearing a mask and a ball cap and a hoodie, very well disguised. The sad, sad thing about all this is, I told you this is a university with $7 billion in their operational war chest from donations and government subsidies and the ridiculously high tuitions it costs people to send have the students enroll in at Brown. So with that big a bankroll in their coffers, this building was not very well equipped. It was one of the older buildings on campus. It was not very well equipped in this modern day and age with surveillance cameras and, you know, highly secured areas that you had to have a key card or a code to get in. It was easily accessible. They do not have any really good images of this suspect. They've got some of him walking away and huddled down where you can't really see his face, and reportedly was wearing a mask anyway. But they are really at square one, according to reports, as far as the investigation goes. And that's pretty distressing, because most of the time in these terrible abominations, that's my word of the night, what to call these, the gunman either is accosted and shot at the scene or commits suicide. That's frequently the end of the story. This one is still an ongoing crisis, and people in Rhode Island are on pins and needles tonight in terror as to what happened. So that's a couple of the spots. Also, halfway across the world, we had American servicemen who were monitoring the transitional government in Syria murdered by, you guessed it, ISIS terrorists. Same affiliation as these two guys that were responsible for the Australian murders. This guy had become an entrusted inner circle guy, despite he was able to conceal his identity as an ISIS sympathizer. And he opened fire at a meeting with Syrian government officials and a couple of United States servicemen, and killed four or five people, including two American soldiers. So a tragic loss there. And of course, we had the horrible, gruesome death of very famous actor, producer, director, writer, Hollywood personality, Rob Reiner, and his wife, Michelle, who was a noted photographer in her career and also a producer later on in life. And it was very odd how that went down. Police were called to the home in Brentwood, California, gated community, and gates on each private residence, just a couple of miles from where the Nicole Simpson, Ron Goldman murder, which O.J. Simpson was, of course, acquitted for, one of the most exclusive neighborhoods in L.A., full of celebrities. When police were called, they found the bodies of Reiner and his wife, Michelle, brutally stabbed to death, apparently. They didn't, the police did not have a press conference for 6 hours. And then the press conference was just a joke, because the detective that was responding was saying, "We're not going to identify the victims until the coroner confirms who they are." Well, the governor and the mayor, the governor of California, Gavin Newsom, and the mayor, Bass, had already given a condolence speech naming the victims as Rob and Michelle Reiner. So, but the police were not going to do that. A lot of analysts said, well, they're just trying to protect their case. There's so much litigation and liability now that they wanted to wait and get warrants before they even searched the place. The press kept asking questions. So is there a killer on the loose here? And they kept denying that because obviously they had already figured out the daughter of these individuals lived on the property in sort of a guest house. And I guess she found the bodies originally and called the police, but had told them that Rob Reiner's 32-year-old son, Nick Reiner, was at the residence earlier in the day. So immediately this had all the earmarks of not any kind of invader. Again, it's a highly secure area. The house has its own security system. And so the police knew even last night who was responsible. And late last night in Los Angeles, they found this guy and arrested him. He's being held now and already charged with the double murder of his parents, which is a hideous thought to start with. It's just impossible to believe that these kind of things happen. This young man has had a troubled life, to say the least, with serious drug addiction, has been in rehab 17 times, according to reports, had several major incidents at this very house when the couple was out of town a couple of years ago, apparently came in and just trashed the place to the point where serious damage was done to the property. He was, again, reported to be a serious methamphetamine, being suffering from the addiction to that substance, amongst other drugs, and for a long time was homeless. The son of Rob Reiner, a multi-million dollar famous, ultra-famous actor, of course, starring as Michael Stivic, better known as Meathead, the son-in-law of Archie Bunker, back in the groundbreaking comedy of the 1970s that really changed TV for many, many generations. With all that said, Rob Reiner went on to become a brilliant writer and director and producer. And of course, the other thing he's been known for in the last 10 years is his extreme leftist politics, probably the harshest critic of Donald Trump, constantly beating the drum that Trump's a dictator, it's the end of democracy as we know it, blah, 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 ignoring the fact that democracy is based on who's elected by the people. And, you know, people way on the left, and I'm not going to spend any more time complaining or trashing Rob Reiner, the late Rob Reiner's politics. He's an American. That's the right he has to take whatever stance he wants. But democracy works when the people speak. And the extreme left needs to understand that just because they don't win the election, that doesn't mean society is collapsing. That just means they're on the wrong side. The bottom line is, it was disturbing. The Rob Reiner style in the last 10 years of his life is to write really vile and sometimes ridiculous accusations about the president and anybody out here in America that would support such a horrible person as Donald Trump. But all that being said, that changes nothing. My first thought was absolute despair, because this was a very talented, very notable individual who created some great movies that will be iconic for forevermore. One of my all-time favorites, A Few Good Men, the Tom Cruise, Jack Nicholson, fantastic movie. Rob Reiner was the producer and director of that. Other great iconic films, When Harry Met Sally, Princess Bride, just a variety of others. The Spinal Tap movies, I think he had just completed a sequel to This is Spinal Tap, which is a chronicle of a mythical rock band. But the bottom line is, to be murdered by your own child is, I can't even grasp that. I can't come to grips with it. And my heart goes out to the survivors, the friends of Rob Reiner. I will say, as controversial as he was at the end, he still was willing to engage in dialogue with some conservative hosts. And again, it's his right as an American, and I would fight and die for that right, for him to be able to say and espouse whatever he believes. And that's what America is all about. We're going to have conflicting views, but nobody at 78 years old, later in life, so successful, so much to live for, still active, his end comes in the most tragic of circumstances imagined. So my condolences to all the Reiner family. My heart goes out to all of them. And it's just such a terrible story to think about what happened to Rob and Michelle Reiner. And I am terribly sympathetic, and my condolences to everybody whose heart is broken by that awful occurrence in Brentwood, California. And one quick other note, I traveled this weekend to New Orleans just for a quick turnaround trip. We were having our big annual horse race. We don't have any live horse racing here in Alabama, so we did have our big $85,000 showcase race for Alabama bred horses, horses that were actually born and raised here in Alabama, that the race, the Magic City Classic, only opened to Alabama breds. It was great. But I had some thoughts real quick as we're reaching the end here. The Director of Transportation, Sean Duffy, came out last week with some recommendations on air travel. You know, we've survived the great government shutdown, 43 days and disruption in our air traffic, and the shortage of air traffic controllers, which they're trying to beef up. They will be able to even improve the system. A lot of the money in the big, beautiful bill passed in the summer was to completely overhaul and upgrade all of our systems for air traffic control in this country that was still being run by old, outdated equipment. It's amazing. We've had the safety record we've had the last 25 years. All that being said, with all this progress being made, and Duffy's doing a nice job as transportation director, stepping in and replacing probably the worst transportation director of all time, Mayor Pete Buttigieg, who was assigned that duty by the Biden administration despite having absolutely no expertise or work ethic in pursuing those duties. We had multiple problems in his administration. But Duffy has done a good job, but I thought he really crossed the line. And again, politically, if somebody is out of line, I'm going to point it out. I'm not afraid of either side. I thought it was ridiculous last week when he said, we need to make air traffic classy again. We need people to stop wearing gym shorts and sweatsuits and flip-flops. If you're traveling by air, it should be an occasion. You should dress for the part. You should have respect for the process. And airports need to be modernized. This is all the Sean Duffy diatribe from last week. They need to be modernized. We need to have workout areas for, you know, to do, you know, steps or pull-ups or something simple. We need to have play areas for kids, which that's a pretty good idea. Because if you're stuck at the airport and you've got small children, it's great to be able to keep them occupied, not just running circles around everybody trying to cope with delays and different problems you run into. And, you know, this is one that kind of torques me a little bit. And we need much healthier food choices at airports. You know, if you want to eat healthy, knock yourself out. I'm all for you. I particularly don't gravitate to, quote, healthy foods. If I want a Three Musketeers or a Kit Kat or a Milky Way, I don't want to go into a shop in the airport and only have the choice to buy a Nutri-Grain bar because Sean Duffy thinks that's better for me. That's not what America's about. I don't want a guy working out before he boards the plane and plops down in the middle seat next to me sweating and smelling like he just came out of the gym. I don't really care for that idea. And okay, if we're going to be so classy and so upfront, Sean, you need to meet with the airlines. They are so cheap and so shoddy and so ridiculous now. There's all kinds of restrictions on passengers. If you are not in the first groups to board the plane, they take your bag literally out of your hand. You have nothing to say about it. They stick a tag on it and check it, even if it's small enough to carry on. They say there's no bin space. You get on the plane, there's plenty of bin space. That's absolutely unacceptable. And back to the, healthy choices. I don't know what the justification for this is. It was an hour and 14-minute flight from New Orleans to Atlanta where we had to connect. No direct flight from New Orleans to Birmingham and back, which is ridiculous. Used to be 5, 6, 7 choices a day, Birmingham to New Orleans. Now you have to go through Dallas or Atlanta or Orlando. That makes a lot of sense. So landing on the way to Atlanta, hour and 14 minutes. When they came by with the beverage card, I said, I'd like a Diet Coke, please. And, I'm sorry, sir, this is an express flight. We don't offer soft drinks. And I said, what? And she goes, we only have water, coffee, and tea. okay, I've been flying for 5 decades. I've had a Diet Coke on just about every flight I've ever taken. I don't like when they start making up things that are not standard procedure. Express flights, give me a break. They have time to serve coffee, tea, or water and shove some bad snacks in your hands. They can hand me a can of soda in less time than it takes to pour a cup of steaming hot coffee. So I call BS on that. If this is such an occasion, the airlines can give you a little bit better treatment as a customer. We land early in Atlanta, and the pilot's bragging about that as we're taxiing in toward the terminal. He said, here we are 21 minutes early. Well, in Atlanta, that means one thing. You pull up to the gate, and guess what? The plane that is in that gate before you arrive, it's not the busiest airport in the world for nothing. That gate is occupied by another plane that hasn't pushed back yet or fully loaded. So after flying 1 hour and 14 minutes to get to Atlanta, we sat on the ground waiting for the other plane to get out of the way for 27 minutes. So what's the point of being early when you just have to sit there for 27 minutes with your seatbelt still buckled? You can't get up and move around. You can't wait in the aisle if you want to stretch your legs or whatever. You have to please remain seated because we could be going forward at any time, whatever. They could give you an announcement. Everybody sit back down. They don't do that. It's not a pleasant experience on flights. It's extremely expensive, and the more expensive it gets, the worse the service gets, and the indifference to the passengers' needs and the inconveniences they put you through are worse than ever. I've been flying for a long time, and they really need to get their house in order. So, Sean Duffy, you're the transportation secretary. Before you implement all your changes, I think you need to huddle with the airlines and say, hey, this is supposed to be an experience. People are supposed to dress up for this. I think the treatment of the customers needs to be a little bit upgraded before you start asking people to treat it like a special privilege to get to fly on an American jetliner. I'm Kip Kiefer. That's what you need to know this week. Thank you to everybody here at TKR. We'll have more next week, hopefully on a higher note, as it will be our special Christmas edition. Merry Christmas to all of you. God bless you. Have a wonderful holiday season. Look forward to talking to you again next week here on Need to Know.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.